come to order. It is 3:44 p.m. on Monday, March 16th in Barnes Room 124. Members present are Representatives Hannon, Gillis, Story, Fields. Representative Rasmussen is excused, and myself, Representative Sponholz, Chair. Please let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Take a moment to silence your cell phones if you haven't done so already for the duration of the meeting. Before we begin, I want to thank Sophia Tenney, the House Labor and Commerce Secretary from Records, and Brett Mello from the Juno LIO for staffing the committee. We're going to cover two bills today, House Bill 27 on flame retardants by Representative Tarr and Senate Bill 52 on Title IV by Senator Michicki. All right. Ms. Hart, would you like to come forward? Talk to us about House Bill 27 very briefly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Carla Hart. I'm an aide to Representative Garen Tarr. And House Bill 27 would regulate some flame retardants in Alaska. And I think, do you want me to go over it again? No. I'd like to just, for the record, if I may, clarify one point. Representative Gillis asked last week about standards for mattresses and flame retardants. Mm-hmm. And I think there might have been a misunderstanding between us. I understood him to ask if the federal government was regulating flame retardants, which they are not at this time. However, the federal government does have standards for mattress flammability that can be met with barrier type and non-toxic options. So they regulate mattress flammability, but not flame retardants.
Okay.
That answer your question, Representative Gillis?
Yes, ma'am, it does.
All right, fantastic. Are there any other questions for Ms. Hart on the bill?
I had a comment.
All right.
Thank you, Chair Sponholz. I just wanted to note, recently I had to buy a mattress for our toddler who grew up her little mattress, and it's actually surprisingly hard for consumers to figure out which products are non-toxic. Mm-hmm. So I really appreciate this bill because without it, I think consumers have a really tough time figuring out which products are safe for their families. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. All right, and with that, I would entertain a motion to move the bill.
I'd be happy to make a motion, Chair Sponholz. I move resources.
Labor and Commerce.
There we go. Is this a resources or labor
resources
and commerce?
Resources committee substitute? At ease.
I move resources committee substitute for House Bill 27, Work Order 31. LF0198/K from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Is there any objection? All right, seeing none, bill moves from committee, and we're going to take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. Chair has a motion.
Yes, I do, Chair Sponholz. I move that the House Labor and Commerce Committee allow the committee chair to draft and introduce committee legislation related to unemployment insurance for the state of Alaska's ongoing response to the coronavirus global pandemic.
Is there any objection? All right, seeing none, we will go ahead and get started on drafting some legislation in partnership with the State Department of Labor. Yes. Representative Hannon.
Chair Sponholz, I would just ask to make sure when you are addressing that, became aware of it this winter with Alaska Marine Highways employees who weren't laid off. Mm-hmm. They were furloughed. Mm-hmm. And so they were in this catch-22, even though there was no scheduled return to work date. They weren't eligible for unemployment because they were simply furloughed. And that hoping that
right. That's a great example of one of the sort of the gaps in employment that can be created right now with the state of Alaska. In order to be eligible for unemployment insurance, if you you have to be either seeking a job or have a note that says that you're not going to be reemployed within 45 days in order to be eligible for unemployment. But for a lot of employees that work in food service, for example, they are not going to be able to work for the next couple of weeks, but are still have a job and will be eligible to work again as soon as we're all allowed to go back to the usual order of business, but they don't have any documentation of that, and yet they still have to pay their rent and buy groceries for their children. And so we've been talking with the department about a specific solution which would serve both those folks and the people that you're describing Anyways, but we will bring that in front of the full committee, and there'll be plenty of time to have a conversation about that in full. So thank you very much. All right, and thank you for the committee support in advancing, I think, what is a common sense solution to help working Alaskans. So next up, we're on Senate Bill 52. Gentlemen, with Senator Machicki and Mr. Jackson, please approach. And I think that we were going to pick up on the sectional presentation. We were close to the end, but not at the end, if I remember our stopping point last week. Put yourselves on the record.
Thank you, Chair Sponholz. I'm just going to hand it off to my staff, Conrad Jackson, who has a little mark where we stopped on the sectional last
week. We can just remind everybody where we stopped.
Good afternoon, Chair Sponholz, members of the committee. We left off on page 98 on section 112 through 114.
Page on the sectional, sir?
Section, page 17.
Thank you.
About middle of the page. And if everybody has reached that point, section 112 through 114 are the yellow sections, again, reorganized and moved around just a little bit for organization. And we're just maintaining unauthorized transportation of alcoholic beverages penalties. The following four sections deal with penalties for sale and consumption or licensee responsibilities for violations. The next page of the sectional, you'll see another number of sections that deal with penalties or reorganization of sections and penalties. In section 120, there is a new subsection dealing with violations of the source of alcoholic beverages, and violating any violations of that section is a Class A misdemeanor. Again, section 121 is reordered. We have the same Class A misdemeanor penalties that are in existence as we speak. The next two sections, section 122 and 123, are, as you can see from the color, penalties sections. And both are Class A misdemeanors for violations either for purchase and sale of alcoholic beverages or furnishing alcoholic beverages in aid of a gambling enterprise. We skip down a couple of sections, really, to the next new section, which is really more important than a repeat of the reorganization. That would be section 131. This is a new key piece, which is keg registration. We're adding a new section to the bill, to a statute establishing a keg registration process, including proof of age, registration form requirements, and identification tags. This is to track kegs at underage drinking parties and just maybe have a little more control. The next two sections you see on page 18 of the sectional are reordered and reorganized, as is the first section on page 19 of the sectional. In section 136, there's some additional language dealing with alcohol server education courses and this deals with a person may not sell or serve alcohol beverages or check ID of a patron at a permitted event unless the person has taken these classes. From there, we go down. If you move down to the bottom of that page, we're dealing with definitions on section 145, dealing with the definitions of a bona fide restaurant, a brewed beverage, calendar year, cider, distilled spirits, golf course, a number of other alcoholic products. The following page of the sectional, page 20, if we move down to section 156, deals with the winery direct shipment and statement and audit. This is a new section of Title IV to establish tax collection for direct winery shipments from out-of-state businesses holding the license. The following sections, 157 and 158, are reordered and reorganized. From there, Chair Sponholz and members, the following sections are transition language and effective dates.
All right. Are there any questions for Mr. Jackson or the bill's sponsor, Representative Fields?
More of a comment, Chair Sponholz. I think as committee members know, today the mayor of Anchorage basically shut down bars and restaurants except for takeout. Mm-hmm. You know, what we're already very tough circumstances for working people and business owners in downtown Anchorage are going to be approaching devastating levels this summer. And I know that we have to prepare for the pandemic, but part of preparedness is helping our businesses survive what's probably going to be the worst depression in Alaska history. And I just hope that we can get this bill across the finish line. I'd like to see it advanced, not changed, because I have a feeling that our days here are very numbered in the building. And just appreciate you hearing it and hope that we can move it expeditiously, because some of my businesses are going to be counting on these reforms to survive.
Appreciate those sentiments, Representative Fields. Representative Stutes.
I just want to make sure for the record, and I know I spoke with the good senator, I believe it was Friday, that this new rewrite does not allow the stacking of licenses in relation to whether you're a distillery, a brewery, or a cider, isn't it? Cider, brewery, cider. You can only own one license in one location.
Through the chair, Representative Stutes, a person could own all three of them, but they cannot be operated in the same under the same license in the same building. So if you're a cidery or a winery or a brewery, and this bill does not change that. That's existing law. We're not changing that. We're silent about it in the bill. That's the way it operates today. If you were to stack them, you're getting very close to being a bar. And there may be some folks that want to do that, but this bill does not do that. You cannot stack them currently, and this bill does not allow you to stack them.
Follow up. Thank you, sir. My point exactly.
Thank you.
Well, just to clarify, actually, just before we move on to Representative Hannon, my understanding is that you can own multiple, but that the total serving limit is the total amount that you can serve is sort of apportioned if you have multiple licenses. So if you had a venue that had multiple licenses and you had a distillery and a brewery and a winery, you wouldn't be able to have the maximum of each of those, that each of those for serving, individual servings, wouldn't be allowed to total up. So you couldn't have two glasses of wine, two glasses of beer, and two distilled beverages, but it would be an apportionment across.
If I may, Chair Sponholz, I think you may be perhaps mixing the sampling.
Okay.
With
thank
the,
you.
Yeah, tasting room.
Yeah, I think I am mixing up those two. Thanks for the clarification. Because I remember that there was the opportunity to be there was an apportionment graphic which showed that if you served multiple beverages that you would in fact reduce the total volume in each of those categories served. So basically, you'd be getting the same equivalent of two drinks for one person.
Right.
You could try different things, and that was for sampling?
Yes.
Okay.
Chair Sponholz, if I can add something, there were questions about the penalties the last meeting, and I started putting something together, and you may have noticed we've been carrying this bill for a little while, and I had forgotten that in your presentation on the bill itself, the mm-hmm. Title IV review report, mm-hmm. on page 74, I'm sorry, on page 75 has the changes to license fees, and then page 76, on table 3, 76 through 78 or 9, actually, I'm sorry, 76 through 81 has the new penalties that are proposed in this bill, mm-hmm. and it talks about the ones that are no changes and the ones that have a new change as well. It has the amounts and where it's defined in the bill.
This is very helpful. This is a very helpful document. All right. Thank you. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Sponholz. I was going to say Mr. Conrad, but I can't remember your last
Jackson.
Name. Jackson. Thank you, Mr. Section 145 deals with definitions and uses kombucha. I quickly turned to the bill. Pages 110 to 111, where kombucha is on line 25 under brewed beverage, means an alcoholic beverage made by fermenting cereal grains, including beer, malt beverages, sake, and kombucha. There are non-alcoholic kombuchas for sale in Alaska, manufactured in Alaska, And I want to make sure that wherever kombucha is addressed in the rest of this bill, that we are not adding in there non-alcoholic kombuchas. But since I had not looked through the bill previously with kombucha in mind at all, I'm wondering where else in the bill is it addressed, or is it very clearly by putting under definitions that is an alcoholic beverage and kombucha that we are only addressing a subset of kombuchas and not all kombuchas?
Thank you for that question, Representative Hannon, through the chair. If it's not alcoholic, it's not addressed in the bill. We currently don't know of alcoholic kombucha, but we've heard of efforts to, you might notice in the industry that when something tastes good as a beverage, it eventually ends up as a alcoholic version of that same drink. We were trying to be somewhat forward thinking on if that does come, so it didn't require a bill to add kombucha to this legislation or the statute.
And just for clarification for everybody, kombucha is actually not made with a cereal grain. It's actually made with what is called a SCOBY, which is, can you remind us what SCOBY stands for? The symbiotic culture of bacteria and yeast, I think is what it stands for, and tea. And it is a non-alcoholic beverage, although my understanding is it can have a very small percentage, but my husband makes it, and we drink it in the household, and we have served it to our underage children, so it is not an alcoholic beverage, just for the record.
Right. And there are several...
Representative Hannon.
Through the chair. There are several communities where kombucha... there are venues in Juneau where kombucha is available on tap that are also licensed liquor sales places,
right,
package stores, etc. So I think sometimes people mistake because there's some effervescence and sparkliness that it is, but I want to make sure that we are not adding in here undue regulations for an industry of the beverage segment that shouldn't be addressed in this because they are not producing alcohol.
I think there might be a little fix in the bill for the kombucha element, so because it's not alcoholic. We don't want to regulate something that isn't actually alcoholic unintentionally. Do you have a comment, Senator Michiki?
Well, I there's a reason that's in there, and I don't know if you want to go to Ms. Brawley for the reason specifically. I know there is research on alcoholic kombucha, and I know nothing about that
subject. All
right. And
before we go to Anna Brawley, I just want to note for the committee that we have a bunch of people that are have called in for testimony today, and we have for questions available Anna Brawley, we have Glenn Klinkhart, who's the director of the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office, Melissa Walter with the Marijuana and Alcohol Control Office, and Susan Jaconis with the Department of Revenue for questions, should anybody have any questions. And with that, we're going to go to Ms. Brawley. Ms. Brawley, did you want to have any comments on the kombucha discussion?
Hi. For the record, my name is Anna Brawley up here in Anchorage with Agnebeck Consulting. And Chair Sponholz, to answer Representative Hannah's questions, I was just researching on the federal TTB website, Tax and Trade Bureau. So they have information about kombucha that I will provide to the sponsor. But essentially, federal law and state law it defines alcohol as anything above 0.5% ABV. So as you said, that could be kombucha if it's fermented and brewed in that way. But most products that are commercially available are not, and so they're therefore outside the jurisdiction of the ABC board. And so this simply contemplates, as the senator said, that if there's a brewery or another person that would want to make kombucha that is alcoholic, that would be under the purview of a brewed beverage. As you said, it's not made with cereal grains, but from the TTB standpoint, it's defined as a brewed beverage, similar to the way that mead is not made from fruit. It's made from honey, but it's still considered a wine. And so that's the way that it's regulated now. But as you said, it would not these regulations would not apply to businesses that currently don't have to be licensed by the state.
So, Ms. Brawley, are you saying that there are alcoholic kombuchas?
Chair Sponholz, my understanding is there can be. I'm not aware that any businesses in Alaska are currently producing them, but theoretically they could be made.
Okay. I wonder if that happens because they're fermented for longer. It's a possibility. Anytime there's sugar in anything, it could be turned into an alcoholic beverage. Kombucha can have sugar in it. So it's possible that you could turn it into an alcoholic beverage, but it's not by its nature fundamentally always alcoholic, just for clarification. All right, thank you very much. All right, are there any other questions for the bill sponsor, Mr. Jackson? While we've got them, they're going to stick around, I think, in case any additional questions come up. But if there's not any, then I think we'll just go on to the invited testimony and then public testimony. All right, and first up for our invited testimony on SB 52 is Sarah Oates, the CEO of Alaska Char. Are you there, Ms. Oates?
Thank you, Chairwoman Sponholz and members of the House Labor and Commerce Committee. For the record, my name is Sarah Oates, and I'm the president and CEO of Alaska Char, which represents many of the nearly 2,000 liquor licenses statewide. We have entered into the ninth year of robust stakeholder work toward meaningful, sensible alcohol regulatory reform, which I have been involved with since its inception. Alaska Char and the Brewers Guild met many times throughout 2019 to discuss the most contentious sections of Title IV that have caused previous iterations of the bill to stall out in the legislative process. I'm very proud to say that through challenging yet thoughtful compromise, consensus has finally been reached between public health, public safety, state and municipal regulatory bodies, and for the first time during this long process, all three industry tiers. Senate Bill 52 includes many changes that would benefit all stakeholders. The addition of endorsements will empower local governments while protecting licensees by giving municipalities a clear legal means to restrict privileges of a license if necessary, without having to request revocation of the license operations entirely. Penalties for violations will be modified to ensure fair and consistent enforcement of alcohol law, something we all know has been lacking over the past decade. I would also briefly note that prior to taking my current position with CHAR in late 2018, I worked for the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office for 7.5 years. While with AMCO, I participated in the stakeholders group as a subject matter expert, recommending changes currently included in SB 52 that would streamline and expedite application processes, which many of you have heard can be cumbersome and costly to licensees. With this bill, members of the industry will be able to pick up a statute book and understand their legal privileges, restrictions, and expectations for the first time in decades. In closing, Alaska Char proudly offers our full support of SB 52, and I implore the committee to pass this legislation as it provides stability for the industry. As Representative Fields said earlier, liquor licensees around the state are grasping at straws to try and make ends meet during, during the coronavirus pandemic. I have personally fielded hundreds of calls and emails over the past 48 hours from terrified business owners. This bill gives us some hope that we can move forward with a better system. I'm available for questions of committee members, and I thank you for your time.
Are there any questions for Ms. Oates? All right. If there are no questions for you today, Ms. Oates, thanks for your testimony. And next up, we're going to Evan Wood with Devil's Club Brewery. Mr. Wood?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we sure can.
All right. Thank you, Chair Sponholt, and members of the House Labor Commerce Committee for the opportunity to testify here. My name is Evan Wood. I'm the owner of Devil's Club Brewing Company, about a 2-block roll down the hill from where you guys are sitting now. And I am also the co-chair for the Government Affairs Committee for the Brewers Guild of Alaska. And in both of these capacities, I wanted to express my support for the bill moving forward. Like Ms. Oates said, it has taken us a long time to get to this point. More than 8 years of a robust stakeholder engagement has arrived us at this legislation that is supported by public health, public safety, and all three tiers of the industry. And I would just like to reiterate that it has taken us a long time to get here, and with this bill's full support, and as the future of our economy at large is in question, and certainly our industry being service-oriented is becoming very tumultuous and a scary business to be in, I am urging the committee to move this legislation forward and try to get this bill passed this year. Because going forward, we're going to need to be focusing very hard on keeping our businesses alive, and we would love to put this legislation behind it. And so thank you for the time and consideration, and we'd be grateful for your support.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Are there any questions for Mr. Wood? All right. There are no questions. Thanks for your testimony today. All right. Next up, we're going to Robin Menard with the Mat-Su Health Foundation.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Robin Menard, and I serve as Chief Communications Officer for the Matsu Health Foundation. Thanks so much for taking my testimony today. Matsu Health Foundation is a founding member of Recover Alaska, which is a funding collaborative that seeks to reduce the harm caused by alcohol across our great state. And I'm testifying today in strong support of Senate Bill 52 because of the public health elements of the bill. It will help prevent underage drinking and support better enforcement of Alaska's alcohol laws. The Matsu Health Foundation and its community partners conducted a community health needs assessment, which included data analysis, public polling, and 24 community forums. Alcohol and substance abuse were ranked as the number one health issue in Matsu. In follow-up research, we asked our local police captains, what is the number one substance problem? And their response consistently over all the years has been alcohol, alcohol, alcohol. Further, the number one reason Matsu residents visit our local emergency department for behavioral health needs is alcohol-related disorders. It's a major factor in many crimes committed in Alaska, including domestic violence and child maltreatment, and having a well-regulated alcohol industry that understands and follows the law is part of the solution. Title IV is recognized in many ways to be very outdated, confusing, and otherwise ineffective in carrying out the intent of the law. Much of it has not been updated since 1980. This systemic redraft of Title IV will benefit organizations and individuals who are affected by alcohol. And as other testifiers have stated, we've been working on this for years, and there's now full consensus among everyone involved, from the industry to public health, and we hope that it moves forward. It'll limit access for youth to alcohol, promote responsible use by adults, and result in reduced harm. And for that reason, the Matsu Health Foundation urges its passage this session. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Menard. Are there any questions for Ms. Menard? All right. Seeing none, thank you very much for your time today. We're going to go ahead and open up public testimony on the bill. All right. And there is nobody in the room testifying. We're going to move to Camden Yaley. Yaley?
Hi, can you hear me?
Sure can. Why don't you go ahead and identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Okay, my name is Camden Yaley. I'm up here in Nettle Lakes in the Matsu Borough, and I wanted to call in. I know I'm a bit late to the party, but we're looking to start a brewery restaurant up here, and are concerned about the population cap changes that this bill includes. It effectively would change the number of brewery tap room licenses from 30 to 7, and there are already 5 taken. So we potentially could be shut out of the entire industry if we can't get one of those remaining 2 licenses. Also, even if we are able to get one, what about the future of the industry around here? I'm a firm believer in the rising tide mentality of breweries. More breweries opening makes more brewery customers, and that's good for everyone. I see this as a shutting down of a whole section of small business and breweries. Breweries need their tap rooms in order to be viable. I understand that the brewery licenses will remain at 30, but with shutting down the tap room licenses, I don't know how they're going to be economically viable. That was what I wanted to focus on. Other than that, this bill looks fantastic. I really appreciate the cleaning up of the rest of the language. It's fantastic to see a readable version of liquor rules. so I encourage you to get this passed. But we're hoping for another look at that population cap. Thank you.
All right. Are there any questions for Ms. Yaley? Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Sponholz. Ms. Yaley, could you narrow in and tell me, are you in the Matsu Borough, and is that, believe it or not, I have not memorized the population cap changes proposed in Senate Bill 52, and tell me what it brings it down to within the, and I assume it's the Matsu Borough.
that it would then be capped.
Yeah. Yeah, so what the bill is doing is it's separating out, well, it's changing the population numbers for how many licenses are available total from 3,000 population for one license to 12,000 population for one license. Does that make sense? So it basically quarters the amount of taproom licenses that are available. And so cities are separated. So the city of Wasilla only has 8,000 people. And so they would get one taproom license available, and there's already one. The city of Palmer only has 6,000 people, so they would only be allowed one. There are already three. Houston also has less than 12,000, so they would be allowed one. The unincorporated Mat-Su borough has 87,000 people, and they already have five tap rooms, which means that only seven total would be allowed, so there would be two remaining available for the entire unincorporated borough.
All right, thank you. Ms. Brawley, are you still on the line?
Yes, Trish.
Could you describe for the committee how the reason for population cap limits and how the restructuring of the population cap limits was designed relating to cities and boroughs?
Yes, Chair Sponholz. Again, this is Anna Brawley for the record. So currently the population limits for most types of licenses is one per 3,000. And that is defined by local government population. So the example being that the cities of Palmer, Houston, and Wasilla and the Mat-Su borough each have their own population limit based on residency. And then for the unorganized borough, there's a different method for determining that limit. So the proposal is to increase the population limit on new licenses. The other thing to note is it splits the manufacturing license between production and the retail room, which is the tasting room that I believe the person is responding to. And so that would allow a manufacturer to get a brewery license with no limit, no population limit on those licenses, and be able to exercise that with, for example, a bar license or a restaurant license or a package store license, which they cannot do today. And so that was one of the discussions about, increasing flexibility and allowing the market to respond to demand without increasing the number of licenses, the purpose of population limits is to limit the number of retail outlets in a certain area because the density of retail outlets is associated with higher public health and safety impacts such as crime, violence, et cetera. And so that was the purpose and the rationale behind splitting the limit on the production licenses from the limit on retail licenses.
You have a question, Representative Hannon?
Through Chair Sponholz. Ms. Brawley, but help me understand, because so the unorganized borough outside the city of Mat-Su, we're going to follow this example, the total number for that borough includes the city capped limits. So they're not getting a separate allocation based on the people living outside the city limits of Palmer, Wasilla, and Houston, correct?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, there are a separate number for within the cities and then the borough population outside of those cities. I should clarify, when I said an organized borough, I meant a location with no local government. And so there's a separate, so there would be no way to determine the residency of that local government. But for a city and a borough, the population in the borough outside a city has a certain number, and then the city would use the residents of that city to determine a separate number. So they are two different numbers.
And part of the reason, if Ms. Brawley, if I can sort of interject here, my understanding was that part of the reason for restructuring the population limits to include the whole borough was to avoid this situation where you have a cap inside a city which is located inside of a borough, which then forced a bunch of alcohol businesses right outside the borders of a city in order to work around the population caps. And the idea was to make sure that we were still recognizing the public health and safety benefits of having a population cap, but creating a little bit more rationalization over a larger population center. When we know that while the cities of Palmer, Wasilla, and Houston are all separate cities, truthfully, people sort of flow in and out of them very organically, and they are actually, a whole large community that is the Matsu Valley, and that this was a remedy to that problem. So you didn't have kind of a ghettoization of alcohol or businesses right outside city population limits. Is that a fair
statement? Yes, Chair Sponholz, that's correct. The other thing to note is the bill includes a proposal to allow cities to petition for additional restaurant licenses. So a city with a small population, as you said, that is serving a larger area could petition for those additional restaurant licenses, make them available, and because there would be no limit on manufacturing licenses, and it would be allowed for a brewery or a distillery or a winery to own one of those licenses, it would be possible to essentially create a brew pub that isn't really easily done today.
All right, thank you. Any additional questions, Representative Hannon?
I think mine is a comment, not a question, which is,
you go ahead.
I think the description that we're hearing, though, from the Matsu and the health concern of you don't want to have it right at your borders, the inverse may be true in the Matsu, where we're going to have this high concentration of breweries between Palmer and Wasilla and Houston. You got five, but that borough goes 100 miles north, and now there's two more brewery permits that are available in that 100-mile radius, but you've got five very closely related. So when the public testimony from Camden Yearley came up, there's only two available licenses in that borough outside of the cities, but between Palmer and Wasilla, you've got five.
Well,
of the seven.
I'm not exactly sure that that's entirely accurate. I think what she said was that this would be limiting it to seven in the Matsu Valley, and that there are already five that are taken, but they're not necessarily in just one small population center. They are, in fact, distributed between Palmer, Wasilla, and Houston.
I thought our consultant, Ms. Braley?
Brawley.
I think she said three Palmer, one Wasilla, one Houston.
Ms. Brawley?
Yes, Chair Sponholz. I don't have the information handy in terms of what specific number of licenses are in each community, because it depends on the population, and I don't know how many of them are taken now. I believe that was the testifier that provided those numbers.
Yeah, perhaps we can get some information on that, but I don't think that there's actually three in Palmer, so I think that might be a misunderstanding there. So we'll follow up, and Mr. Jackson, I'm sorry, could you follow up and get that information for us? Thank you. All right, next up we have Paul Thomas. Mr. Thomas, are you on the line still?
Yes, I'm still on the line. This is Paul Thomas. I own Alaska Cash Liquor here in Juneau. Thank you, Chair Sponholz. I just want to show my support for SB 52. As you've heard before, it's 8 long years of work on this and work inside the industry to get a compromise. And, there's everybody has had to give a little bit to get to where we are, but we're at a good place right now that we need to get 52 through. Everybody's sort of come together and this compromise, health and social services, and everybody all along the way has come to this one set that we have here in front of us now. And I just urge that you keep 52 moving forward, because it's going to give stability to our industry that we really need, and it's been agreed upon in industry and that kind of stuff. And with the current situation we have with the COVID-19 and the uncertainty in our tourism industry we're facing right now, definitely in Juneau here where I live, but all over the state, it's really imperative that our industry has this piece of stability to be able to go forward. Our industry is going to take a huge hit here in the next few months to a year, and we really need this piece that everybody has finally come together on and everybody finally agrees on. It's super important for us in the industry and Alaska as a whole, I think, because the hospitality industry is one of the biggest bodies in Alaska, meeting with tourism and everything, and we really need this. I urge you to pass it.
All right. Thank you very much for your testimony. Are there any questions for Mr. Thomas? All right. Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony today. Helen Hartman, are you on the line?
Yes. My name's Helen Hartman. I'm the club manager of the American Legion, Post 17 in Kodiak. I have been in the industry for over 30 years. The Senate Bill 52, the product of over 8 years of hard work from 150 stakeholders around the state. As someone who has run both a bar and a nonprofit fraternal organization in Kodiak, I fully support Senate Bill 52 and compromise that has been reached between retailers and manufacturers. With substantial negative impacts from the coronavirus pandemic on the forefront of our minds, our industry is in dire need of stability. This bill will provide much needed stability. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for your testimony today, Ms. Hartman. Are there any questions for Ms. Hartman? All right. No questions. We're going to move on then to Josh Hegna.
Hello, Chair Sponholz and members of the House Labor Commerce Committee. I'm Josh Hegna, one of the owners of Girdwood Brewing Company. I fully support Senate Bill 52. As others have already said, this is a result of an eight-year collaborative stakeholder process, including public health and safety in all three tiers of the alcohol industry. We've made compromises, and at the end of the day, this bill will provide meaningful improvement to alcohol regulation in Alaska. In the last 3 years, Girdwood Brewing Company has created over a dozen good-paying jobs and given back to our community in many ways. Additionally, we've forged friendships and partnerships with the restaurants and bars in Girdwood throughout this entire state. The entire hospitality industry and our economy as a whole is at risk of getting hit real hard by this coronavirus. For all our sake, I encourage you to push SB 52 across the finish line as quickly as possible. None of us want to be back here discussing this stuff next year. We all are going to be working on getting back on our feet. So, again, thank you for your time and what you do for Alaska. Is there any questions?
Are there any questions for Mr. Hegna? All right, there are no questions. Best of luck to you as we have shortened hours and fewer people going out and visiting your brewery these days, Mr. Hegna. Next up, Bobby Wilkin.
Hi, everyone. My name is Bobby Wilkin. I'm the owner of Hoodoo Brewing Company up in Fairbanks. Thanks for your time. I'm calling in support of Senate Bill 52. When my wife Jessica and I started working on opening our brewery about 10 years ago, we gave ourselves a crash course on the alcohol regulations of Alaska. We navigated through the process and built our business in compliance with the regulations. Through that process, it was obvious that the regulations needed to be improved, clarified, and modernized. Over the past 8 years, the stakeholders of this industry have worked tirelessly to develop a compromised improvement, which is before you now as SB 52. This bill will modernize our industry and will allow it to move forward for many years to come. As has been said before, the COVID-19 crisis is giving a major financial blow to many industries, including ours. At Hoodoo, we anticipate closing our doors to the public anytime now for the sake of public health. This will be a major financial challenge for us, to say the least. This bill is supported by all the stakeholder groups, and I ask that you take the opportunity to move it forward while it's in front of you. So when the day comes that we can open our doors again, we can focus on keeping them open, keeping our employees employed, and keeping the beer flowing. Thank you all for your time.
All right. Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Wilkin. Are there any questions? All right. There are no questions. Next up, we're going to go to Ben Milstein.
Hello. This is Ben Milstein, owner of Kodiak Island Brewing Company. And I wanted to testify in support of SB 52 as well, basically just echoing the testimony that you've already heard. This has been kind of an arduous process over many years, and to finally reach a compromise which all stakeholders are more or less okay with is great progress, and we'd all like to be done with the whole thing. So it's we've come to a great point, and we're all hoping that we can kind of move on for all sorts of reasons, many of which have already been mentioned. So that's all I have. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Milstein? All right. Thank you very much. Next up, we're going to go to Doug Hoag with Kenai River Brewing Company. Am I pronouncing your last name correctly?
Doug Hoag, yes.
All right. Proceed with your testimony.
Hello, Chair Sponholz and members of the House Labor and Commerce Committee. My name is Doug Hoag, owner of the Kenai River Brewing Company in Soldotna. Thank you for your time consideration. I'm calling in support of SB 52. I believe that this is certainly a right step, a good step in the right direction to modernize Alaska's liquor laws. Kenai River Brewing Company has become a hub of our small community. We proudly employ over 30 people, and most of them are full-time. In light of the current times and the threat of a worldwide pandemic, our industry is dealing with quite a lot. Please support this bill, which represents over 8 years of collaboration, so that I can focus on keeping my employees and my doors open. Thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Hoag? All right. Seeing none, we're going to move on to Bert Cottle of Wasilla.
Okay. My name is Bert Cottle. I'm the mayor for the city of Wasilla, and I just want to thank you for this opportunity to testify. Madam Chair, I've had just a couple of things. The City of Wasilla supports the one amendment that still is in there. We were hoping for more amendments, but at least we have an opportunity to go back once a year now, if that amendment stays, to ask for additional restaurant, bar, and beer and wine licenses. But what it does hurt us, and I'm sure Senator Michicki would agree with this as being a former mayor, is our economic development. I'm actually over the limit right now for package stores, and I'm over the limit on full pours. So what this does is take local control away from the local jurisdictions for economic development. But now we've been told by the senator through the hearings that, you know, that you guys will come back next year and fix whatever needs to be fixed next year. I question that, because usually after 7-8 years, and it's taken this long to get there, nobody wants to come back. But also, with what's going on with the coronavirus right now, you will limit me from getting a Costco out here, because part of their marketing strategy is to have a liquor establishment or a liquor package store in their footprint. So I worry about that. I could have an additional $40 million in food supplies out here right now if this was to happen again, that I may be limited because of my economic development numbers. So we think Title 29 gives us local control. I mean, I can determine how wet or how dry I can be. I can determine how damp I can be. But when it comes to how wet we can be, I'm controlled by the state. So that scares me, because with our population numbers, I will never get another package store inside the city. I will never get another full pour inside the city. And then you're raising the population limits. So I think the educational aspect we all support. I think the law enforcement part we all support. So I'm hoping that Senator Michicki gets his granted his wish, and if anything still needs to be fixed, we can come back next year and at least come in once a year and talk to the ABC board about not only about our beer and wine licenses, also about package stores and full pours.
All right. Thank you very much for your testimony. Are there any questions for Mayor Cottle? Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Sponholz. Ms. Mayor Cottle, are you, when you say come back once a year, do you mean to the legislature, or is there a provision in the bill for a review at the ABC board level for a local government to request a change in the cap of the population limits?
So thank you for that question. So under the bill as presented at this point, under Senate Bill 52, we would be allowed once a year to come in front of the liquor board, ABC board, and ask for additional beer and wine licenses. Now, they could be granted or not granted, but I would at least have the opportunity to come in once a year and ask for, say, two or three more licenses, and then the liquor board would have the option of either granting them or part, all, or any anything in between. But there is no provision to come back and say, I've got Costco coming and I need one additional package store. There's no provision in the statute right now.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for bringing this to our attention, Mr. Cottle, Mayor Cottle. All right. And that looks like that's the end of folks that are on the line for public testimony. So I'm going to go ahead and close up public testimony. I had a couple of questions for Mr. Jackson, if you could come back up here. Okay, one of the things that has been brought to the attention of this committee is the fact that the Alaska Performing Arts Center has a challenge as it relates to their theater license, and has been told by the alcohol control board that they can't have alcohol on site at the Performing Arts Center. Do you want to talk a little bit about the theater license issue? And perhaps we can talk to Glenn Klinkhardt as well.
Thank you, Chair Sponholz. For the record, Conrad Jackson, staff to Senator Michicki. Chair, I've actually had a brief, very brief, email conversation with the attorney who represents the PAC. And they were operating, or he was operating maybe under a slight misconception that there was language initially in the initial version of SB 52 mm-hmm. that had been stripped out. That wasn't actually the case. The theater license, as it stands now, has been there the whole time. My understanding is the license, the language in the license right now would be sufficient except for potential issue with the building and the ability for the Performing Arts Center to limit minors' access to areas where alcohol is being served. I can't, I am speculating, I'm going out on a little bit of a limb, Chair, but that is my understanding of the issue. And we're not addressing building layout at all in this legislation.
All right, thank you. I want to go over to Glenn Klinkhardt. Are you on the phone, Mr. Klinkhardt?
Madam Chair, yes, this is Glenn Klinkhardt, Director for AMCA.
All right, it's good to hear your voice. Could you describe for the committee your interpretation of the theater license as outlined in the bill and whether or not the serving of beer and wine at intermissions would still be allowed at the Alaska Center for the Performing Arts?
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's my understanding that it would be, but some of the problems that have been brought forth by the PAC to my office had to do with controlling, you know, the access, especially for minors and for those shows that, you know, we all would like to have or go to and take our kids to. And I've been trying to meet with them, and we've been talking about coming up with some different ways that we can control the area. There's also been some conversations about another bill that specifically talks about theater-type licenses, which has some other language in it. However, I can't specifically find, I'm a little kind of screaming through here trying to find the exact theater portion of this that would solve all the problems. Part of it I think we can solve with just simply working with the PAC to be able to segment areas that can change during certain times. But this is a great example of how the old 20, 30-year-old Title IV doesn't allow for things like this. They never, you know, imagine things like trying to do stuff at museums or plays and allowing people to be able to partake in alcohol while they're at a show. So I'm glad we're talking about this because these are the sort of changes that we've been looking to have.
Yeah, Representative Field.
Thanks, through the chair. So just to clarify, Mr. Klinkhardt, Mr. Jackson said at a previous hearing this current bill protects the PAC's ability to continue serving alcohol basically in the atrium. Is that your understanding, that the current draft protects that ability? It doesn't expand it, it doesn't shrink it?
You know, I'll be honest, I don't know that is the case, but then again, I have to always refer to people who are subject matter experts in these areas, and, you know, I don't have a clear view looking at the statute here. Either way, I think it's something that we need to ask a few more people who have spent some of these 8 years developing this.
My understanding is that the bill as it's crafted right now allows for a theater license so that beer and wine can be served, but that there's some ambiguity about the way that it could be implemented for in the past and for as long as I can remember. And you know, I'll just be clear, I don't drink alcohol, so it's not an issue for me personally, so I haven't paid close attention to the nuances, but my understanding is that beer and wine has been served in the foyer for some time, and that there hasn't been any restriction on you know, the area in which beer and wine can be held, but that there are limitations in statute and perhaps in regulation which say that if you are serving beer and wine, it has to be in a 21 and older area, and right now the Performing Arts Center does not do that. There's another bill that's been introduced in the Senate that would also allow for beer and wine to be taken into the theater. I don't think that it's the intention of this chair that we expand access to alcohol, but we do want to make sure that you can continue to, if you go and you see the symphony at the Performing Arts Center on a Friday night, that you're able to get a glass of wine during intermission, as you've been able to do for, you know, decades now at this point in time, for all I can remember. Yep, Representative Fields.
Thanks, Chair Sponholz. And I thought that's what the bill said, and perhaps could Mr. Jackson just confirm yet again that that is the intent of the sponsor, mm-hmm. that is what the bill says, so that we can have some comfort that the longstanding practice of the PAC can continue under the bill as written. Thank you.
Chair Sponholz, Representative Fields through the chair. If members turn to page 17 of the bill, you'll see section 0409250. And what we're doing with that license is relocating the license from 3AAC 304695. So this is in fact just a continuation. We're codifying mm-hmm. the regulations that allowed the PAC or other theaters to serve alcoholic beverages.
All right, thank you. I think that's very clear. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Sponholz. Mr. Klinkhart, have you exercised enforcement of alcohol at the PAC over the last decade when they have been legally selling it? And have you had concerns about its mixing beyond the atrium area?
Through the chair, this is Director Klinkhart. I cannot give you any examples in the last 10 years. In fact, in my very extensive 4 months on the job, I've inquired about that. And our enforcement people have had discussions with the PAC, but they have not gone so far at this point to be issuing citations, because as I learn more about the problem, in that they've been doing this for quite a while. And the first question I asked was, has anybody been hurt? Do we have any safety issues? Because I'm all about public safety. And the answer has been no, there have not been any incidents. So the PAC has shown the ability to regulate themselves, and yet the old Title IV information has shown that they've been doing it at least against statute. And so therein lies the rub. And so I've kind of directed my people that at this point, let's see about getting these areas of 52 passed so that we're not in this place where, as an enforcement agency, we have to take enforcement action against something that isn't necessarily a problem, if that makes sense.
Answer your question. Mr. Klinkhart, this is Chair Sponholz. Could you, is it in statute or is it in regulation that that references the need to isolate a 21 and over area where alcohol is served?
Thank you, Chair Sponholz. It's my understanding that it's in statute having to do with regulated areas allowing people under the age of 21 not to enter.
Okay.
And I believe it's my understanding that that was really developed as part of the bars. And so, again, this goes to show that a lot of the Title IV stuff is based in stuff that was created when we only had, our only options were either a liquor store or a bar.
Well, Mr. Klinkhart, it is also true that if you go to community events, I can think of events that I've been to last summer in downtown Anchorage where there's been beer gardens, for example, in a broad public event. And if you want to get a beer, you have to go through a 21 and over area and get carded. Is it your position that the Performing Arts Center would have to do something like that, where there's sort of stanchions and then you show your ID to demonstrate that you're eligible, you know, that you're 21 or over in order to drink alcohol? in the Performing Arts Center?
Chair Sponholz, as I'm looking at the theater license section in here, and it shows to me that it has to do with it would cover the area. We still would have an area here that they can sell in designated areas. So very much like as you described a beer garden, they would have to have designated areas specifically for this purpose.
All right, but they'd still be able to sell beer and wine as long as they had a designated area.
Correct.
All right, thank you. That's very helpful.
Okay.
All right, there any questions for Mr. Klinkhart? All right. I had one other question for you, Mr. Jackson, and that was regarding internet sales. Could you describe how alcohol is sold over the internet and how we would regulate that in the state of Alaska?
Chair Sponholz, it's my understanding that alcohol sales are not currently regulated, and we do address that, but probably best would be to hand that off to Ms. Brawley.
All right. Ms. Brawley?
Yes, Chair Sponholz, I'm here.
All right. Can you answer the question? Can you talk about internet sales, how alcohol is sold over the internet, and how this would work in the state of Alaska?
Yes, Chair Sponholz, this is Anna Brawley again for the record. Currently, as Conrad said, essentially alcohol sales online are not regulated in the state of Alaska. Each state or most other states have some rules in terms of which products can be sold by whom and how much per year. So the proposal in the bill is to limit online sales to wine from wineries, and that is consistent, as I said, with I think about 44 or 45 other states currently use that system. And then you would be able to order from a winery that has a direct shipment license in state or out of state, and you would be required to, you know, demonstrate that you're of age and that you can legally purchase. You would not be able to purchase in a local option area. And again, in Alaska, that means a dry or damp community, one that has restricted the importation or sale of alcohol in their boundaries. But those folks could still order through an in-state package store, which is what's done today. And then the other products, again, would not be allowed for out-of-state sales, but in-state package stores today can currently ship to customers beer, wine, or spirits. So that would be still available as well.
And if you order from an in-state package store, would that be considered an internet sale? Or does it depend on how you contact the package store? If you live in a community, for example.
Sure. Chair Sponholz, so regardless of where you live in state, currently if you order from a package store, it must be done through what's called a written order, and currently that's interpreted as a paper order as long as your ID is already on file with the store. So it's not you're not allowed to order online now. So another piece of the bill proposes to allow Alaska package stores to offer their products online. And again, with the same protections, if done through a dry or damp community, would still have to report into the written order database that controls the monthly limits on those customers in those areas.
Mm-hmm.
But you would be able to do that online, which you cannot do today.
All right. Thank you. Are there any other questions about this topic? All right. Thank you very much. That concludes my questions. Is there any other comments from the committee on this bill before we wrap up? All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Jackson. I appreciate your time today. Well prepared as always. So on Wednesday, we're going to take up four bills. It'll be a busy afternoon. We're going to take up HB 257 on financial institutions by Representative Bart Lebon. It'll be an initial presentation and some invited testimony. We'll take up SB 195 on insurance companies by the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, pending referral. There will be an initial presentation and invited testimony. We'll pick it up again on Friday for committee action. There'll be HB 146 on auto dealers by Representative Klayman. We heard that bill on Friday, as you may remember. We'll take up public testimony and consider amendments and look to the will of the community. The amendment deadline for that is Tuesday at 5 p.m. SB 52, I'm sorry, the title 52. the Title IV rewrite that we've just discussed this afternoon. We'll consider amendments and look to the will of the committee on Wednesday afternoon. The amendment deadline is 5 p.m. tomorrow. That's Tuesday. We'll also take up some confirmations at that hearing. Our committee aide, Ted Madsen, will be in touch regarding the confirmations that we're going to take up. The hearing will extend into the evening. We'll take a brief break at about 5 p.m. so everybody can take care of biology, and then we'll extend into the evening. So make sure to bring some snacks. On Friday, we're going to take up SB 195 that we're hearing on Wednesday as well. The amendment deadline will be Thursday at 5 p.m. We're going to take up HB 94, Sarah Hannon's vaping products excise tax bill, will be up for public testimony. We'll consider amendments and then take action on the committee. The amendment deadline for that is also Thursday at 5 p.m. We'll also have some confirmations at that hearing. Mr. Madsen will let everybody know which confirmations we'll be taking up. And unless there are any additional questions from the committee, I'm going to go ahead and adjourn at 4:52 p.m.